Welcome to the March 28th, 2019 edition of the Crypto.IQ Daily Radio Show, where we do a deep dive market analysis every day and cover the biggest stories in the Bitcoin and crypto space. This is your host, Space Marine, live from space. Bitcoin tried hard last night to get through that $4,000 resistance level, which has been quite a stubborn resistance level. It's been in place since March 15th for 13 days, now almost 2 weeks. So last night, around 8 p.m., Bitcoin went as high as 4,037, and that's actually just as high as it went in the morning. Bitcoin was around 4,037 yesterday morning, and then it declined as low as like about 4,000, maybe 3,995 at one point. But yesterday evening, Bitcoin went back up to 4,037, but lo and behold, it was pushed back again as low as about 4,000, and currently Bitcoin is trading near 4,010. So that $4,000 resistance level continues to be in place. It is a critical level that Bitcoin must break in order to rally. And it seems this resistance level stretches up to at least 4,060. So we need Bitcoin to go up to 4,060 and then stay up there. Like what we've been seeing is Bitcoin kind of goes above 4,000 to like 4,037 like last night, and then it gets pushed back. In order to say this resistance level is broken, we need Bitcoin to go through 4,060 and then stay up there and even keep going up. I think this will actually happen via a short squeeze. Like when it happens, we'll know this resistance level is broken. It's going to happen with a rapid rally if it happens. I don't want to get ahead of myself. There's no guarantee of this. It could go the other way too. Bitcoin could go down. We're still in a bear market. But if this resistance level is to break, there will be some sort of positive news or some sort of positive investment from a whale. And it would cause a short squeeze, which is where there's a layer of short orders. And as Bitcoin price starts to rise from some sort of positive factor, short orders are closed. And when a short order is closed, it must be covered by buying Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is bought to cover the short order. That causes Bitcoin's price to go up. And then it kills another short order and they must cover it. They buy more Bitcoin and Bitcoin's price goes up. And it happens in a rapid feedback loop. It could happen within less than an hour. Bitcoin's price can go up like a lot, like $100, $200, $300 all at once. So hopefully that's what happens. We're in a good position right now this morning. It's at 4,010. The crypto market's generally bullish. Yesterday was very, very bullish, and I think that sentiment's carrying into today. Bitcoin is trying to get through 4,000. So hopefully we finally get that short squeeze, which gets rid of this $4,000 resistance level. Beyond 4,000, there's the $4,200 resistance level. It's actually more like 4,200 to 4,300. That's a long-term resistance level that's been in place since December. And if we break that, we could be talking about a real bull run, like a big rally. If 4,200 is broken, maybe we can go all the way up to 6,000, which is where Bitcoin was in November before that big crash. So we'll have to watch this day by day, hour by hour, to see if Bitcoin can finally get through these stubborn resistance levels. The good news is the 30-day exponential moving average EMA of Bitcoin is positive for the first time since November. And that matches and mirrors how Bitcoin has gone up pretty steadily since early February. It's gone up from 3,300 up to where it is now at 4,000. There's been some crashes in between, though. So hopefully we can get through these resistance levels. Things are looking a lot more bullish than they did in previous months. Moving on to the rest of the crypto market analysis, it's a mixed morning, and that's because Bitcoin's kind of stuck at this 4,000 level. If Bitcoin were to rally at all, if it got through 4,000, the rest of the crypto market is absolutely poised to rally, but right now it's just sitting there kind of idle and mixed because it's waiting for Bitcoin to do something. Ethereum is up 0.3%. Ripple's down 0.1%. EOS is the really big winner the past couple days. It went up like 15% yesterday, and it's up 5% as of this morning over the past 24 hours. So EOS is at $4.29, $3.89 billion market cap. It's well ahead of Litecoin now. So Litecoin was in number four for a while in CoinMarketCap because it had a huge rally over the last month or two. But that Litecoin rally has kind of cooled off, and EOS really rallied a lot the past couple days. So EOS is in number four, Litecoin's in number five. Litecoin is up 0.1%, Bitcoin Cash up 0.6%, Binance Coin up 0.2%. Then Stellar, down 0.1%. Cardano, down 1.1%. Cardano was another crypto that was doing really good yesterday, but it's giving back some of those gains this morning. Tron is down 0.5%. Bitcoin SV down 0.7%. Monero up 0.5%. IOTA up 1.5%. Dash up 0.9%. And then let's look at Dogecoin, up 0.2%. So it's a mixed morning on the crypto market. Basically, everything depends on Bitcoin finally getting through 4,000. We're still waiting for that. It's been very tough to do that. Bitcoin has tried like a handful of times at least to get through 4,000 and been pushed back every single time. The total cryptocurrency market cap has risen from about $142 billion to $143 billion over the last 24 hours. So the total crypto market cap is gaining. This is like the highest I've seen it in a while, even though it's not much higher than it was like maybe like a week ago. It almost hit 143, but it is at 143 billion. That's much higher than the bear market low of 100 billion. So there has been quite a bit of healing. We're talking it's like over 40% higher than the bear market low right now, the crypto market. There's been a lot of healing, but at the same time, we cannot declare the bear market to be over. We really got to push through 4,200 to go way past that before I'd be comfortable in saying, yes, the bear market is over. So, all right, moving on to the first interesting news story of the day. So BitMEX Research studied running a Bitcoin Lightning node, and the Lightning Network is the best chance Bitcoin has for scalability. The Lightning Network allows users to send payments back and forth between each other with very low fees. We're talking like fees in the Satoshi level, like very minute fees that are practically not noticeable. And this works by like basically it opens a channel by sending a transaction on the Bitcoin blockchain, and then the channel is open. You can send as many transactions as you want without any further fees, pretty much. And then you close the channel and that costs the fee. So the cost of opening the channel and the cost of closing the channel, which is two transactions, is the total cost for all the transactions sent in the channel. We could be talking like thousands, millions of transactions, I guess, theoretically in a channel just for the cost of two transactions. So that's the cool thing. And it has been working. Like Bitcoin has had times where the fee starts to rise in the past several months, and then the Lightning Network just increases in capacity because more people start using it. So it's there, it's working. But anyways, BitMEX Research was trying to see, hey, how profitable is the Lightning Network for someone running a node? So if you run a node, you actually get the transaction fee. So whoever uses your node pretty much like pays you some Satoshis for each transaction that is sent, or even like fractions of a Satoshi, actually. But anyways, BitMEX Research found that if you're really on top of it, you can earn 1% every year from running a Bitcoin Lightning node. So that's like a new revelation. I've never heard of someone trying to calculate the annual yield from running a Bitcoin Lightning node. But here's the caveat. You got to be on top of it. Like, you got to research where do people need liquidity. Like, you got to actually research, like, the Lightning Network itself and find, okay, I need to put money over there because that's where people need it, sort of thing. Because there's parts of the Lightning Network that earn less fees and parts that earn more fees. So if you're constantly putting your Lightning Network capacity into a part of the Lightning Network that has the highest available fees, and then you can earn, like, 1% annually. And BitMEX Research speculates that there probably should be a business for this sort of thing, because it would probably be difficult for someone to do this on their own. It takes a lot of time, and then they just earn 1% annually. So maybe there'll be a business in the future that like kind of monitors the Lightning Network and finds where to put the capacity for the highest returns. In fact, BitMEX Research has a chart. It shows that if you're not on top of things, you could actually earn fees of only 0.0005% annually. So if you just like, you know, don't even pay attention to trying to get the optimal fees for your capacity, you can earn like 0.0005%. But on average, the returns are usually from 0.0005% to 0.0015%. But then if you really are really good at this and you find where the highest fees are that people are paying, you can get like 1%. So there is potential to make money with Lightning Network apparently very slowly. And that's kind of interesting. Zooming out, basically people are paying liquidity providers. So if you're running a Lightning node, you're kind of like a liquidity provider for the Lightning Network. So you're using your capital to provide liquidity for transactions, and that's why you're being paid. And by the way, there is $4.2 million in the Lightning Network right now in the capacity, 1,050 bitcoins. So that's been going up a lot over the past months. The Lightning Network is still pretty new. It like went from like having like no capacity of like a Bitcoin, and then like 10 Bitcoins, and now has 1,050 Bitcoins. So it's really growing. It's very positive, but it still has a lot more room to grow. And this BitMEX Research is very interesting and will probably help Lightning Network adoption, because once people see that they can actually earn 1% using some strategies to get the highest fees, maybe that'll increase adoption. Like, people will be more interested in putting money in there, because then they can look at it as like a way to earn interest on their Bitcoin in a really safe way. Moving on to the next story. So we talked about Bitmain yesterday, how Bitmain applied for an IPO on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, and they were basically rejected. It had been 6 months since their application was submitted, and then if an application is not put into the hearing mode by 6 months, it gets, like, thrown out into the trash bucket. Well, Canaan, C-A-N-A-A-N, is another major Bitcoin mining rig manufacturer and crypto mining rig manufacturer in general. And they tried to go public on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange first. Their application actually lapsed in November. But now they're talking about, perhaps because of this Bitmain news, that they're considering going public again. So it's interesting that we have all these IPO stories about Bitcoin mining manufacturers at this time. It seems like the Bitcoin mining industry is getting just slightly better. It's finally recovering from the bear market. And immediately we're seeing, like, the top two mining rig manufacturers talking about an IPO, because Bitmain says they are going to apply again, and then Canaan's saying we're going to apply too. And I'm looking at the mining hash rate. So it was as low as, like, maybe 30 exahash per second or 32 at its lowest point in December. And now it's crawled back up to almost 50 exahash per second. It's actually gone up one day up to 52 exahash per second. So most of the mining rigs in the world are being turned back on. It's looking positive eventually. You know, the market could become bullish for the Bitcoin mining rig manufacturers, especially if Bitcoin could get through these resistance levels. But anyways, back to Canaan. So they're not exactly sure where they're going to apply. They might apply on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange again. They might apply in the United States. And by the way, there's, like, this United States OTC market over the counter where, like, anyone could really list their stocks. It's not really an IPO, though. So, but they could technically go public on the US OTC market, and there would be probably a little chance they would get rejected. They'd probably get on there, no problem. There's a bunch of companies that are really weak on the OTC market, and also some really good companies. So, yeah, they could do that. But apparently, Canaan shareholders are considering the Science and Technology SciTech Innovation Board that has been added to the Shanghai Stock Exchange. So it seems like they're more focused on getting listed in China, because China is where they're based, and that's where, you know, the people that invest in them are, mostly. So we'll see what happens with that. Basically, the second that Bitcoin mining has gotten better, finally, and most of the rigs are being turned back on, and Bitcoin's price is looking a little more bullish, we're seeing these companies talk about an IPO, which would raise them a lot of money. They basically really want to do an IPO, but the conditions were so bad before they weren't allowed to do an IPO, but I think the moment they're allowed to do an IPO, if that happens, they will do it, because they could be talking about raising, like, $1 billion. Like, Canaan apparently raised hundreds of millions of dollars recently, and they're valued at $1 billion, so if they put their shares on there, they'd probably raise more hundreds of millions, even $1 billion. So, yeah, that's why they want to do it. In fact, stock market caps are really high compared to crypto market caps. Like, you can look at, like, an average penny stock. It has a market cap of hundreds of millions of dollars, sometimes $1 billion, sometimes more than $1 billion. So stock market has a lot of capital going around. So if Canaan is looking good in any way and they actually get an IPO, their market cap could easily go over $1 billion. So that's why they want to do it. It's a really easy way to raise lots of money, but at the same time, there's a pretty big barrier for entry for a real IPO, because the operators of the stock exchange don't want, like, a pump and dump scam on their exchange. So if everything's looking really positive, though, and Bitcoin's really going up, and it looks like it's going to be good for a while, they probably will allow it, though. So we'll have to wait and see for that. There's probably nothing happening anytime soon. These applications take months and months and months, even if it is going to go through. Moving on to the next story of the day. This is probably the juiciest story of the day. So Stellar was actually hacked in 2017. An attacker exploited the merge OP frame and do apply function and created 2.25 billion Stellar XLM, and this actually represented 25% of the circulating supply in April 2017. So, like, a really significant amount of Stellar circulating supply in early 2017 was from this hack. And the Stellar Foundation has released a statement now that this has come to light, and they said that they talked about this bug twice in some release notes, but apparently no one saw them, I guess, because I never saw this in the news until now. But they claim they reported it, and then they apparently burned the equivalent amount of Stellar lumens, and it was worth $10 million back when it happened, but now that's worth about $250 million. But they say they already burned that out of the supply to true up, quote-unquote, the supply. And I guess Stellar could do this, because Stellar is not a typical cryptocurrency like Bitcoin, where you can't just burn tokens out of existence. At this time, Stellar has a circulating supply of 19.24 billion Stellar lumens, and the total supply is 104.8 $4 billion. So it's not exactly clear when they say what did they burn. They can't, like, burn people's tokens that they're holding. Because, I mean, the hacker did make them in an illegitimate way, I guess, technically. But he probably sold it to other people for cash. And, you know, then other people own those tokens. They can't just burn, like, lumens out of people's hands. But the Stellar Foundation controls most of the supply of Stellar. That's kind of like Ripple. So Ripple also has this issue where most of the supply is held by Ripple Labs and the Ripple Foundation or whatever. Well, Stellar is modeled after Ripple. In fact, Jed McCaleb was a co-founder of Ripple, and then he kind of left Ripple. He didn't agree with what they're doing, and he helped create Stellar. So it's from the same mastermind, Jed McCaleb, and he likes these sort of cryptocurrencies, which have a tremendous amount of the supply locked up by the organization that runs it, pretty much. It's very lucrative. But anyways, so I'm not sure what they're saying when they say they burned, like, that many tokens. I'm guessing they burned some of the tokens they had, because, like, right now, even at this moment, they have, like, 85 billion Stellar XLM in their hands. So they burned maybe 2.25 billion of that, and then they said, okay, the hack is done. We burned 2.25 billion of our own Stellar, because, you know, we have, like, 100 billion of them anyway. Like, right now, they have 85 billion. So, yeah, so this is very interesting, and Stellar is number 9 on CoinMarketCap. You usually don't see major cryptocurrencies like this ever reporting that they actually got hacked and their supply was inflated by a hacker. Like, it happened to Bitcoin in the early days, but they immediately, like, got rid of it. Like, they forked it. That was, like, the hack that created 182 billion Bitcoins when the circulating, or the total supply ever is only 21 million Bitcoins. But they handled that within the same day, and, like, yeah, they actually solved that pretty well. Stellar literally got hacked, and it went on, and the hacker got all the money for the Stellar lumens, and then they kind of burned some of their own Stellar to say that the supply was trued up. Moving on to the next story of the day. So Local Bitcoins is based in Finland, and Local Bitcoins is, like, the most popular peer-to-peer trading platform, at least as far as I know. Like, back in the early days of Bitcoin, Local Bitcoins definitely was the most popular. Like, back in 2014, 2015, 2016. It was definitely the most popular platform where you could trade Bitcoin from yourself to another person for all sorts of payment methods, like Western Union or cash deposit or cash in person. Anything you could think of, even PayPal, Amazon gift cards, anything. Like, so Local Bitcoins is kind of like the place you trade Bitcoin kind of under the table for, like, any payment method you want to anyone you want sort of thing. It was kind of like a Wild West out there. A lot of the arrest stories for Bitcoin dealers, like, most of them come right out of the Local Bitcoins. Like, people that are found to be laundering, like, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars of Bitcoin. A lot of those stories come right from Local Bitcoin. So anyways, apparently Local Bitcoins is going to be placed under direct supervision from the Financial Authority of Finland. So this is new. They were never under direct supervision from any government agency, but now they're going to be. And this is in order to comply with European Union anti-money laundering laws. It's specifically called the European Union Fifth Anti-Money Laundering Directive. So Finland is apparently part of the European Union, and they know Local Bitcoins is, like, a big deal, and, like, a lot of money laundering probably happens on it still. So they're placing it under direct supervision, and this is probably going to drive a lot of people on Local Bitcoins crazy. But here's the good and the bad. The good thing is, at least they didn't get rid of Local Bitcoins. You know, they decided to regulate it. So that's quite noble of them to say, okay, we're going to regulate it. But, you know, there's got to be laws. We got to prevent money laundering. Instead of saying, let's throw it out, kind of like what they did to, you know, Prohibition when they made alcohol illegal. And then everyone starts, you know, selling alcohol under the table. And then the mafia forms. Well, at least they recognize that banning something that's popular and needed doesn't work, and they're trying to regulate Local Bitcoin, so that's cool. The bad thing is people in Local Bitcoins are probably going to get really anxious and paranoid, and they might just go under the table anyways, I guess. But there's not much, you know, the government could really do to make it better than they're trying. So, you know, if people get anxious and paranoid on Local Bitcoins because it's being watched by the government, you know, what are they supposed to do? Not watch it at all? So I don't know. It's a sticky situation. It's hard to figure out. And I guess Finland is trying to do it in the best way, but that still might drive a lot of Bitcoiners crazy that, you know, all the info they put into Local Bitcoin. So when you trade on Local Bitcoins, I think it's like you need your ID, a lot of your personal info, like nowadays. Back in the day, you didn't really need that, but now you do, I guess, from what I saw recently. So people might not want to put all their personal info into local Bitcoins if they know it's going directly to the Finnish government, and then it might be used against them. So that's just kind of the way it's been going in the whole world. Bitcoin dealing started as like a Wild West where there was really no laws at all, besides that Bitcoin is legal and they could do that, sell it like anything else they sell. Well, it's gone from like being totally Wild West and no real laws to stop anyone from dealing Bitcoin to being really tightly controlled. And overall, the whole world has shifted from using Bitcoin dealers, which is like a human being that actually trades Bitcoin for people. Like someone will go to the Bitcoin dealer and buy some Bitcoin or sell some Bitcoin. It's shifted from that to like actually Bitcoin exchanges and Bitcoin ATMs, which is way more regulated and way more above board, way more on the book. So that's the way the world has gone. And overall, it's kind of sad, but at the same time, at least the government has decided to regulate Bitcoin. Like they kept it legal and they're regulating it instead of like making it illegal and forcing it way underground where all the criminals would be able to control the market and be like a mafia for Bitcoin. So that's good that didn't happen. So that's all I have for you today on this March 28th, 2019 edition of the Crypto.IQ Daily Radio Show. Come back tomorrow for another exciting episode and go to Crypto.IQ for the most interesting stories in the Bitcoin and crypto space. Also, join the Crypto.IQ trading desk. They have made 317% profit since July, even in the worst of the bear market. And if you join the Crypto.IQ trading desk, you can see their trades in real time and a full trading analysis of each trade. And you can ask them questions in real time. You can ask them as many questions as you want, and they'll answer all of your questions pretty quickly. So if you join the Crypto.IQ trading desk, you could become a profitable cryptocurrency trader. And by the way, there's a 2-week free trial right now, so there's no risk to join. And I'm sure once you join, you're gonna love it. This is your host, Space Marine, signing out. I remain in space.